after Luke came to live with us, I told Owen, we're going to raise this boy like he was our own. He's never going to know a day of unhappiness to make up for all the terrible things that happened before he was born. I really think I succeeded, except for Owen's not allowing Luke to go to the academy. And, of course, what happened to Owen and me that day with the stormtroopers. I really wish Luke hadn't seen that. Then again, if he hadn't, he never would have gone off with old Ben, met the princess, destroyed the Death Star, and saved the galaxy. So I guess things did turn out all right in the end, didn't they? Especially now, because up until this moment, no one has ever given me a chance to tell my story. So thank you for that. Now go drink your milk, and may the Force be with you.
The Luckless Rodian by Renee Adie. Today would be the day. Greedo had known it last night, as he'd watched the binary sunset sink along the hazy horizon of Tatooine. After many long years, justice would finally be served upon Han Solo. The Rodian bounty hunter sensed something ignite deep within his chest and catch flame. Some long-denied satisfaction. Today, Greedo planned to put that arrogant Corellian scum back in the cesspit where he belonged. His dark eyes narrowed against a gust of billowing sand as he trudged through the winding streets of Mos Eisley toward a familiar cantina. A smile nearly curled up his green lips when the arched entrance came into view. As luck would have it, his quarry had been sighted just yesterday, seeking business in the very same place Greedo often transacted his own deals. Of course, the two kinds of deals in question differed wildly. The cowardly Corellian was a mere smuggler, whereas Greedo dealt in a variety of death. He'd even begun taking bounties from the greatest crime lord of the Outer Rim, and Jabba the Hutt was known to be particular when it came to his associations. Save for the cowardly Han Solo, of course. Greedo sneered at the group of hooded Jawas crouched outside the cantina door. He would never understand what Unselta had found so appealing in Solo all those years ago. The smuggler had always been a worthless excuse for a man, while Unselta had been everything Greedo had cherished in a woman. Such a waste. Kicking aside the nearest Jawa as he passed, Greedo strode through the entrance, careful not to make eye contact with anyone present. His gaze remained fixed on the bar in the dusty center of Chalmun's cantina. Thankfully, the band was playing a less noxious strain of music than usual. There was only so much he could stand from these particular biff, especially without the solace of several drinks in his stomach. Even still, it was a fitting backdrop. Figrin Don and the modal nodes, tuneless strains, set alongside an occasional brawl. For as long as he could remember, Mos Eisley Spaceport had been a beacon for the art of the underworld. It was the same underworld of Greedo's childhood, when he'd been brought from Rodia to live on Tatooine. As luck would have it today, his quarry had chosen to take up temporary residence on one of Greedo's homeworlds. Today would be the day. Greedo took a seat at the bar and signaled the sneering bartender for a drink. He watched the silver and brass pipes above gleam dully beneath a fog of swirling hookah smoke. The tumbler of Corellian Red swirled in his hands as he awaited his prey in silence. After he'd downed three of the brews, his attention drifted toward the arrival of a towering Wookiee. Since Chalmun, the purveyor of this establishment, was himself a Wookiee, the sight of these overgrown beasts was far from unusual in these parts. But this particular Wookiee caught Greedo's attention nevertheless. His long green fingers clenched around his tumbler. From the corner of his eye, Greedo watched the Wookiee begin making his rounds. Watched and waited.
Hey!
The barkeep pointed over Greedo's shoulder, his already disdainful face contorted with irritation.
We don't serve their kind here.
Greedo glanced behind him to see a wide-eyed boy with two droids clambering in his shadow. The boy looked like exactly the kind of fool who didn't know any better and would likely die for it before the day was out. Why anyone would bring in droids to take up the spaces of living, breathing patrons, Greedo would never know.
What?
The boy asked, his ridiculous eyes going even wider. The barkeep ground out his retort.
Your droids. They'll have to wait outside.
His shoulders dropping, the boy muttered something unintelligible to his droids. This fool would be lucky to make it through an entire drink at Chalmers. Never mind another year of his life in general. Untried bantha fodder. Snorting to himself, Greedo turned back toward the bar, continuing to tune out the mindless prattle of those seated nearby while the band changed its tune. His gaze settled on a beguiling young creature across the way, with eyes that shone like the barrel of a newly polished blaster. Eyes just like those of Unselta.
Curse her for being as big a fool as the boy with the droids.
Greedo would have loved her as she deserved to be loved. Not dallied with her like that Corellian scumbag had chosen to do. Greedo continued observing Solo's first mate from his periphery, biding his time. If he was patient, the Wookiee would lead Greedo's quarry right into his clutches, into a justice so long unserved. He was distracted from his musings by raised voices. That same awkward boy was engaged in the beginning of an altercation with exactly the kind of creature who would bring about his inevitable end. What kind of shirt was the boy wearing anyway? What sort of simpleton wore white in a spaceport as dirty as Mos Eisley? Sure enough, the boy flew back into a table at the first sign of a cross word. Further distracted by the ensuing commotion, Greedo twisted around in time to see an old man in a peculiar robe flash a weapon he'd heard of in passing, but never seen in person. An ancient saber fashioned from glowing blue light. The weapon snarled through the air, and the instigator's severed arm struck the floor in almost the same breath. Amid the strangled screams, Greedo laughed to himself. With nary a flinch, the Bith resumed playing their tuneless music. After all, these kinds of disturbances were far from unusual in a place like Chalmers Cantina. Indeed, if the purveyor of the establishment had been present, he undoubtedly would have relished the spectacle. Wookiees were known to enjoy a good dismemberment, as much as any Rodian did. At the reminder, Greedo craned his neck closer toward the particular Wookiee he'd taken note of earlier. The hulking, fur-covered stranger had loped toward the bar and was now in the midst of a hushed conversation with the old man in possession of the snarling saber. Greedo remained hunched and alert as the Wookiee signaled to someone hovering in the darkest fringes of the cantina.
His stomach tightened into a coil of knots.
Solo was on his way. A moment later, the smug coward ambled toward a table to the left of the bar and began chatting with the saber-wielding old man and the foolish boy. The knot in Greedo's stomach became a jumble. Anticipation flared through his center, mingling with that same satisfaction like kindling to a flame. Today would be the day. Greedo slunk lower into his bar stool, continuing to bide his time, continuing to wait for his opportunity. He kept silent and still, while a contingent of Imperial troops collected in front of the bar, drawn by the earlier commotion. The barkeep was all too eager to point them in the direction of the fool boy and his elderly bodyguard, who quickly ducked out of sight. Greedo's ire spiked. Worry cut through his earlier blaze of triumph. If the stormtroopers thought to detain Solo, his opportunity would be lost. He thought for a moment about confronting him once and for all, with little concern for the presence of the Empire's lackeys. But the risk was too great, and Greedo could not risk the additional possibility of rousing Jabba's anger. If Greedo did decide to throw caution to the wind, he might lose the chance to stare his enemy in the face and experience the supreme satisfaction of watching Solo squirm in fear, like the coward he was. Greedo stood from the bar and moved into the shadows nearest to the alcove where Solo sat with his first mate, smiling as though he had not a care in the galaxy. A breath of relief passed Greedo's lips when the stormtroopers passed the table and continued on their way. As soon as the Wookiee left and Solo stood from the table, Greedo made his move, yanking his blaster from his holster. He would not waste this opportunity. Today would be the day.
"Going somewhere, Solo?"
he said in Huttese, as he shoved the barrel of the blaster into Solo's vest.
"Yes, Greedo, as a matter of fact, I was just going to see your boss."
The coward backed away, shoved toward the same alcove, his hands raised at his sides as though to convey a desire for peace.
"Tell Jabba that I've got his money."
He sat down at the table.
"It's too late,"
Greedo said, as he took the seat opposite Solo, a white lantern glowing before him, bathing the air between them in cool light. Solo slouched into the back of the bench, an amused half-smile beginning to curve up one side of his face. Fury shot through Greedo's chest.
"You should have paid him when you had a chance. Jabba's put a price on your head so large, every bounty hunter in the galaxy will be looking for you. I'm lucky I found you first."
He laughed under his breath. Perhaps luck had nothing to do with it. It had been his patience, his intuition, his hatred. Perhaps if Unselta could see them now, she would not have made the same mistake she'd made those many years ago. Hate filled the hollow around Greedo's heart. The sight of Solo tossing his booted leg onto the tabletop and grinning with casual arrogance only heightened Greedo's growing rage. The suggestion of a frown fell upon Solo's face. It was gone in almost the same instant.
"Yeah, but this time I've got the money."
He waved his left hand through the air. Once more, the picture of supreme arrogance.
"If you give it to me, I might forget I found you."
Forget? Greedo could never forget. But he would gladly take the scum's money before delivering him to Jabba. Or perhaps he'd blast a hole through Solo's chest, just like Unselta had done to him. Solo winced with irritation.
"I don't have it with me."
He glanced over his shoulder and began circling his fingers across the rough wall at his back, as though he were toying with something only he could see. His head lolled against the gleaming bracer above the bench.
"Tell Jabba."
"Jabba's through with you."
Unmistakable irritation laced Greedo's words.
"He has no time for smugglers who drop their shipments at the first sign of an Imperial cruiser."
"Even I get boarded sometimes."
Solo's retort was curt.
"You think I had a choice?"
"You can tell that to Jabba. He may only take your ship."
Greedo's finger tightened on the trigger of his blaster. Solo's left hand fell from the wall.
"Over my dead body."
Whatever lingering traces of amusement that remained vanished from his eyes as a shadow descended across his features.
"That's the idea."
triumph spread through Greedo as satisfaction began to take root once more.
I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
He grinned, peace tinging the air around him with a strange sweetness. At last, vengeance would be his. He would live to see Jabba rob Han Solo of the only thing the coward prized. And it would be glorious.
Yes, I bet you have.
Solo glanced to one side as though in thought. The last thing the luckless Rodian saw was a flash of bright light. His last memory was that of bitter injustice.
Not for Nothing, by Murr Lafferty.
The Lady Has a Jossamer. My Life as a Modal Node. A Memoir by Ichabel Gaunt. Chapter 3, Not for Nothing.
Tatooine was the worst place in the galaxy for Bith. When your skin is milky white pink and your eyes are lidless and tearless, a planet with two suns, high heat, and blowing sand is essentially a jail sentence. When Figrin Dan and the Modal Nodes got a gig on this planet, we all protested.
Our skin will burn off our skulls, Tech Moore said.
What if we get sand in our eyes, Dan? I demanded. I have the best eyes of the whole band, and even I find myself particularly sensitive to irritants. How good are we going to play when we are staggering around looking for an eyewash? Do they even have eyewashes on Tatooine? Then came lie number one.
We are invited to play for the ruling lord on Tatooine. I'm sure his palace will have all the accommodations we will need.
He didn't say that the ruling lord was a hut, a species that's not really known for hospitable and clean living spaces. Then came lie number two.
We are only there for a standard week, tops.
We were there over a year. Then the best lie, number three.
The money is incredible.
Now, if I'd been Dan, I would have let the group know the facts this way. I've got some bad news. I'm in serious debt to a hut, and have sold all of you into indentured servitude in the sandy armpit of the galaxy. Once we pay off the debt, we will have to find other gigs in order to get enough money to get the hell off the planet. Working for the hut will be the worst job you will ever have. We didn't talk to him for weeks after the truth made itself known. We played for Jabba and his companions within the palace. Were they companions? Visitors? Prisoners? We were never sure. Palace. Please. I've seen palaces. I've performed for kings. This was no palace. After a few months, we finally accepted that this was our lot in life. And the one bit of good news was we were still the Modal Nodes, which meant we played the best music in the galaxy. Never mind that it was for a crime lord slug and his lackeys and slaves, but it reminded us of our humble beginnings when you took what gigs you got offered. You also pay attention. You never know what kind of dirt you can get. We watched people wheedle, cajole, and deal with Jabba. One interesting thing about Bith that other species don't really know is how we can separate different sounds around us. It's what makes us such good musicians. We can listen to the different instruments separately or together to make sure everyone is in tune and working well together. We can also listen to conversations that otherwise would be drowned out in lesser ears. So we were privy to many of Jabba's dealings that happened while we played, and he had no idea. We learned to know and hate many of the residents of this world. One of my least favorite people was Greedo, a Rodian bounty hunter. He is actually the person who found Figrin Dan and delivered him to Jabba. We hadn't known Dan had a price on his head. The things your band leader doesn't tell you. Dan had me keep a close eye on Greedo and find some dirt on him. I pointed out the bucket of sand I had to wash out of my eyes every night and said, I got dirt on everyone, it's right there, but he told me to get over it and stop complaining. brave card to play, as he put us in this situation, but Dan always was a terrible gambler. So I watched Greedo. He would bring in small-time criminals who owed Jabba, get a pat on the head and a handful of credits, and stalk away very proud of himself. I kept track of the money he demanded from Jabba and the money that he got, and the times he would slip keys or blasters to his quarry so they could escape, and then he would bring them back in for another reward. He brought in one poor Jabba 3 times. When it was time to pay off our debt, Jabba asked for more than twice what he said Dan initially had owed him. We expected this, so Dan counteroffered information instead of more credits. That's when he brought Greedo down. Jabba was furious at the bounty hunter and actually let us go. In the middle of the desert, naturally. But when a giant slug surrounded by several heavies with weapons sets you free in the middle of the desert, you thank him kindly for the freedom and get moving. We counted our stars that he let us go at night so we could at least avoid the suns. I honestly didn't expect him to let us go at all. So thanks, Jabba. I'll buy you a cup of slime the next time we see you.
Editor's note. Since the writing of this memoir, Jabba the Hutt has been murdered by an unknown assassin within his palace. Jabba the Hutt cannot be thanked anymore. Still, the author requested we leave this entreaty in the text.
We made it to Mos Eisley soon after the suns rose, which was good because my hands were beginning to turn pink and my eyes were burning. We found a place for the band to stay while Dan, like a good leader, went to get us a gig. Tech went with him because he wanted to make sure Dan wouldn't go and gamble away our new freedom in pursuit of more credits. Now is when I suppose I have to answer the question you've been asking yourself. Why in all of the galaxy do we choose to stay with Dan? He put us in slavery to a Hutt. He got us marooned on a planet that is antithetical to Bith. He gambles like a drunken uncle with bad luck. The reason should be obvious. Figrin Dan is the best composer and bandleader you will ever find this side of the galaxy. We knew that if we left, we'd never be able to find another leader quite like him. When we're getting thrown into shackles or washing sand out of our eyes, it's hard to appreciate him. When we're playing, nothing in all the worlds is better. We found 2 cheap rooms to keep all 8 of us and played a game of Hiller dice to decide who would be stuck sweeping the filthy place, who had to cover the windows, and who was able to sit and relax from the horrible travel we'd suffered. I was stuck with the window duty, and as I unrolled the black fabric to protect us from the glare, I caught the sight of a slim green snout sticking out from a cloak scurrying down the road. Uh-oh. I secured the fabric and then asked if anyone knew where Dan and Tech had gone. The rest of them shrugged, and I grabbed my cloak, left the apartment, and headed back into the Tatooine heat. Now that we'd had a bit of a rest and some not-so-brackish water to drink, I was able to take a look at the new town we inhabited. It was... well, it was better than Jabba's palace, but that's not saying much. Hot, sandy, run down, and no one would look you in the eye. Also, stormtroopers patrolled the streets. One stopped me with a hand on my shoulder.
We're looking for 2 droids.
I haven't seen anything, I said, and then realized I had an opportunity. Around here, anyway. But I just spent some time at Jabba the Hutt's palace, and I'm pretty sure he brought in at least 2 new droids recently.
What did they look like?
He demanded. One was green? Or maybe blue? I said, guessing. He stood back on his heels, and although I couldn't see his face, he exuded a mood of either disbelief or reluctance. A trooper with an orange half-sleeve came up to him.
What have you found?
He asked.
She says she saw a droid like that in the area of the Hutt's domicile,
his companion said, as if not wanting to deliver the information.
Check it out,
he said, and left. The remaining trooper took another look at me, and I could feel the dislike radiating off him. Good luck, I said, and scurried away. I had kept an eye on Greedo as he headed with purpose down the street. I wish I'd known where Dan had gone, but I had to think that he was looking for a gig, so he would be searching for bars and dance halls. Mos Eisley didn't look like a place with many dance halls, but it did look like a place people would need a drink. I inquired of a passing woman where the closest bar was, and she pointed me a few doors down. Luckily, Greedo had already passed this bar, so I ducked in. Dan and Tech were inside, speaking with a large Wookiee. A disgruntled Rodian, taller and darker skinned than Greedo, was packing up a flute and making a big production out of it. He pushed by Dan rudely, shouting that no one fires Dota Badona Weedo. Dan didn't make things better by shouting after him that Chalman just had fired Dota Badona Weedo. Dan spied me.
Ichabel, this is Chalman, owner of...
Chalman's Cantina. I get it, I said. Can we talk for a second? Dan sent Tech to talk to me while he palled around with our new boss.
What a pit, huh?
Tech asked, looking around the cantina. Better than Jabba's, I said. From then on, better than Jabba's would be how we would describe anything that was terrible. And speaking of which, I saw Greedo sniffing around outside. If he finds us in here, we could have a problem. Tech grinned at me.
The Wookiee says he comes in all the time. But this is the safest place on the planet.
He pointed to the signs on the wall listing in several languages the rules of the cantina. I scanned the rules, and then read them at a slower pace. I smacked Tech upside the head. That says applaud the band, not do not under any circumstance attack the band, I said. That doesn't guarantee safety.
Oh, you're right, he said.
He looked back over at Dan, who was signing the contract. I groaned.
Well, Tech said, at least he's not selling us into slavery again.
Dan came over, all smiles.
We start in an hour. Get the rest of the band over here.
You do know that Greedo is a regular customer here? And he's not going to be thrilled about you giving him up to Jabba, I said.
We have a Wookiee on our side. What can go wrong?
Chowman's Cantina was better than Jabba's. That's what we could say about it. When things go wrong, you can try to see how your situation challenges you. We have played in award ceremonies against the wind, in the middle of a rainstorm, and for lords and ladies whose idea of fun would be to whip prisoners and feed them to rancors. That last one was Jabba. Did you guess? At the cantina, we were shoved onto a small dais on the corner, having to get cozy with one another while we played Dan's furious tunes. The stage was tight and the customers were unenthusiastic, but these kinds of challenges are what I live for. However, I didn't realize what else would happen that afternoon. First, Chalman, the super-safe Wookiee that would save us from Greedo, went home. He said he wasn't at the cantina all day and night and he needed a break. He promised Wooher would protect us, but with the sidelong look the bartender shot us, I thought that was unlikely. So I kept my eyes on the door while we played. As the day went on, the cantina filled up with various unsavory characters. I had to hand it to Wooher, though. When people got pushy or something, he put a stop to it. A bar fight started near us, one patron throwing another one straight at the stage. As there was no free room on stage, we faltered on a song as we scrambled to get out of his way. Dan was furious and stopped the song while he called for Wooher to help out. The bartender threw both brawlers out, but then fixed us with a grungy eye.
You don't stop playing. Not for nothing. Got it?
Dan nodded. We got it. We answered by starting the song again at the beat Dan led with. People at these kinds of places tended to look alike, all of them dirty and shady with something to hide. Outsiders stood out like, well, like a Bith on Tatooine. So when two humans entered the bar who stood out more than we did, they caught my eye. Wooher grunted at them to keep their droids outside, their gold protocol droid and their blue astromech. I looked from them to Dan and then remembered the rule. Keep playing. I knew I should tell the Imperials about the droids during our break. There might be a reward that could get us off this hell planet. I begged Dan with my eyes to get us a break, but he ignored me. These droids were clearly sought after, but why didn't the stormtroopers outside find them? I was curious. But the two men were clearly up to something, as carefully innocent as they acted. It was their innocence that made them stand out, honestly. Ironically, they blended right in once they were challenged by a huge brute, and the hairier of the men brought out a laser sword and cut the arm off their attacker. The arm smoked slightly on the floor, and its former owner shrieked. We stopped playing, of course. But then Wooher glared at us, and we hastily started up again. So we were supposed to just keep on with the music while people were losing limbs? And here I'd thought this place was better than Jabba's. Say what you will about the slug, he didn't mind if we were startled out of tune when he murdered someone. A large Ithorian left his seat and headed for the bar, and I nearly swallowed my Jossamer reed when I spotted Greedo. I don't know how long the slimy little guy had been lurking behind him. Greedo looked right at us, and I faltered for a note or two, but we didn't stop.
Not for nothing,
Wooher had said. Not for a severed limb, and definitely not for a bounty hunter with a grudge. Greedo went to the bar and ordered a drink, then watched us, unblinking. Dan instructed us to start a new song, fast and catchy, and we played it, defiantly ignoring Greedo. He watched impassively, fingering the blaster at his hip. We were allowed to quit if our lives were in danger, right? Or did that fall under the not-for-nothing rule? I didn't know. But I was getting into the music when Tech poked me in the back. Greedo had started to move. He was stepping around the bar. I wondered wildly whether someone had cleaned up the arm or if he was going to trip. He didn't. And heading our way. I tried to get Dan's attention, but he was too into the beat. In the middle of the song, I felt my double Jossamer begin to slip apart at the joints. Dan hadn't given me any chance to properly clean it, and I'd done a messy job oiling it to make up for the ever-present sand. Now, I was in trouble. Everyone has their own version of the next part, and most of them have to do with, look how clumsy Ichabel was, but here is what really happened. Everything you've heard, I did on purpose. I gave my Jossamer a quick turn with both hands, opposite directions, and it fell apart. The valves and tubes went flying, and the circular joints that made up the body and all of the vibrating reeds fell and rolled toward Greedo, who had picked up speed. He stepped on an oily joint and went flying backward. Dan scowled and pointed at the mess while still playing. Don't stop, not for nothing. Right. I hopped off the stage and got on the floor to grab the discarded pieces of my instrument. Greedo was still down, rubbing his head, and I kept an eye on his blaster. I scurried to the other side of the dais to put my abused instrument together. The other patrons were giving Greedo a good ribbing, and he finally got up, bright green with anger. He glared at me and then looked past me. His face changed, slackened, and then he smiled. If you can say his kind can smile. He turned and left us without a backward glance. What had delighted him so? I saw he was heading toward another white human male who was with a Wookiee conversing with Wooher. Someone he wanted more than us. That must be someone with either a big bounty or with whom Greedo had a bigger grudge. I got back on the dais and started playing an even faster song, one of Dan's favorites. Everyone looked exasperated but gratified that Greedo had been distracted. They still don't believe I did it on purpose. I started thinking again about those droids and whether they could get us a good payout. Dan wouldn't give the band a break while the bounty hunter was around, so I wouldn't be able to tell the troopers outside until Greedo was gone. The human male and Wookiee were speaking with the other two humans, the ones with the droids. Everyone left the table but the human that had caught Greedo's interest. Greedo slipped over, and just as the human stood up, cornered him with a blaster. Greedo calmly encouraged him to sit back down. The tempo changed, and I had to focus on Dan for a moment, and then light flared, and Greedo slumped down on the table in front of the human. I don't see a lot of humans, but I thought their facial expressions were more expressive than this man showed. The patrons around them looked over in alarm, and Wooher looked ready to shoot the human himself, but the man tossed him some credits and sauntered out. Although we wanted to cheer, we kept playing. We didn't stop. Not for nothing. We had been saved. Jabba had let us go. Greedo was done for. Our tip jar was filling up, and things might be looking up for the first time in a very long time. As we played another one of Dan's newest songs, captivity had been strangely inspirational to him, I have to admit. I thought about those droids and the stormtroopers that searched for them. I thought about a possible reward. And then I decided that if that human could do us a favor without us knowing him at all, we could do those other humans a favor and not report them. We were safe now and could keep playing. Which is really all we ever wanted to do. Play and don't stop. Not for nothing.
We Don't Serve Their Kind Here, by Chuck Wendig. As if the day wasn't bad enough, the God's blame droid detector wasn't working right again. Because who just walked in but a couple of God's blame droids? One was a rickety old protocol droid, tarnished and sand-scoured. The other a blue-topped astromech. Both probably came off of some Jawa sandcrawler. Each probably half a circuit shy of a proper droid. Couple of junk bots that'll just wreck the place, like droids do. They got no hearts. They got no soul. And now they were here, in his cantina. It was bad news in an already crummy day. Like a hawked-up glob of spit on top of a poodoo sundae. Wooher, bartender at the Mos Eisley Cantina, started his day the same way he always did. Up before the two suns, weary from a night of ragged, dream-worn sleep, breakfasting on salted zuka and pulverized gravel maggots before stomping upstairs to the cantina. He turned on all the lights, warmed up the machines. Already the first bad news hit him. They were running low on damn near everything that would calm tempers on this hot, dead world. No gar slurry, no fistula juice, none of that hooch that the Gamorreans cook up. Wooher pulled out the telescoping arm from underneath the bar top, popping the latches and unfolding his datapad screen with a rackety clack. Of course, that wasn't working either. He had to blow sand scree off it, then whack it a few times, and all that got him was a glitching screen full of fat, corrupted pixels. That meant he couldn't pull up the delivery schedule. He was pretty sure that his guy, a spacer named Bims Torka, was supposed to deliver a shipment of stuff yesterday. Maybe even the day before. Torka was supposed to bring him the standard stuff, plus maybe a case of knockback nectar from Jakku, which was about as nasty a brew as you could get. Bubbly, high-octane booster fuel, basically. Got people too messed up. Wooher knew that this thing he did, this thing behind the bar, it wasn't art. Any lunk-brained sand-eater could do it. But to do it right, you had to know some things. And one of the things you knew was that you didn't want your drinkers too drunk too fast. That happened, and they were out. Stopped buying and started fighting. Or worse, started puking. Still, they wanted the stuff, so he charged a premium. But now he didn't have it. Didn't have any of it. What he had was the dregs, which they'd buy, but they wouldn't like it. And that meant he'd have to hear them complain. And the last thing he wanted was to hear them complain. What was he, their nursemaid? Soothing the poor little babies? Animals. Whining, mewling animals. It was what it was. So he hit the button to open the locks and roll up the gates. Ugh, that didn't work either. So he took a pivot wrench to it and gave it three good whacks. Bong, bong, bong.
which got it open again. The locks hissed. The gate opened with a staccato rattle. Didn't take long before the joint was full up. Full of spacers and traders, pirates and smugglers. All around were dustheads, spice hounds, flesh peddlers, gear tinkers. The usual. But no droids. Never droids. Later in the day, the modal nodes were playing. And they were all right, guys and girls. At least for Biff, who, let's be honest, were pretty bizarre. And he hated their music. Just sounded like noise to him. Then again, everything sounded like noise to Woor. Worse than the nodes was who came in next. The smuggler, Solo, and his walking shagpile co-pilot. Woor didn't know where the hair stack came from. He thought those Wookiees were a slave species. But this one didn't look like no slave to Woor. Only other Wookiee he knew was the one that owned this cantina. A fella named Chalman. Also not a slave, which was fine by Woor. Nobody should have to be a slave. It was part of the lifeblood of this planet, because of the Hutts. And now, thanks to the Empire, it was part of the lifeblood of the whole damn galaxy. But he wouldn't have a part of it. Sure, he could have help here if he bought a slave or two. Then it wouldn't just be him. Yeah, he's got Akmina working some nights. But a couple of slaves would take the pressure off him during the day. But it didn't seem right. It didn't seem right at all. So then, as Woo-Her was pumping drinks and ignoring questions, Solo headed over to a dark corner of the cantina. Like he was holding court. Like he was waiting for something or someone. The big, hairy son of a gun went to the other side of the joint, which seemed strange to Woor. You got a bowcaster sporting tree-trunk bodyguard like that fella, you never let him leave your side. That monster looked like he could slap the head right off your shoulders. Solo, yeah, he looked tough enough, but not Wookiee tough. Plus, last Woo-Her heard, Solo had debts on his shoulders. Not just any debts, neither. A debt to a Hutt. The Hutt around these parts. Jabba. It's practically the kind of wisdom you'd want to hang on your wall. Never owe Jabba the Hutt anything. Ever. But there sat Solo. Owing Jabba. Sitting alone. The Wookiee gone. That was when one of the freaks on the other side of the bar, a guy named Jericho, pulled the smoke stem out of his mouth, blew a few vapor rings, and then said in his undeservedly haughty way, "Oh my, somebody is in trouble today." He lifted his chin to indicate who came through the door. Greedo, the Rodian, bounty hunter scum. Woo-Her didn't care much for bounty hunters and bailjackers. It went back to the slave thing. People owning other people. But he couldn't close the door to them. Unless they were droids. He had that droid detector installed for damn good reason. If word got around he didn't serve the hunters, he'd get a reputation. And on this world, you don't want a reputation if you want to stay in business. Greedo walked in, looked around, sat down. The Rodian saw Solo. Solo pretended not to see the Rodian. That's when Woor knew. He was going to be cleaning up a real farging mess soon enough. This was a trap for Solo. Or maybe, he thought, a trap for Greedo. Woor figured they'd all find out soon enough. Then he spied that crazy milk-eye moonbat sitting down. Guy who called himself Rufu. Rufu had a friend today. A sad-looking Aqualish who Rufu introduced in his growly whine of a voice. "Hey, you! This is my friend Saki. He drinks for free!" "Nobody drinks for free," Woo-Her said. But Rufu kept talking like he didn't even hear the answer. "That Rodian you dragged out of here,
I could have taken him. I could have killed him.
I'm sure you coulda,
Wooher said, scowling. Big boaster, this guy.
I could kill anyone in here.
You gonna order something?
Rufu ordered a couple of black fizzers for him and his brooding aqualish friend, which Wooher quickly delivered before heading to the other side of the bar to fill a few more requests. Someone hissed at him.
Ugh, the smoker again. Jericho.
What?
Wooher snapped. The man had a drink already. Wooher always told people, if you have a drink in your hand, you don't need me for nothing. And yet they always talked to him. Always had to jabber and yammer.
That man over there, with one bad eye and the face.
Yeah? Rufu.
That is not his name. He's a killer. A surgeon, or once was, by the name of Dr. Cornelius Evazan. Be wary of him. Be wary of his partner as well. The Aquilish, Pondababa.
Jericho pursed his lips. The man was an incorrigible know-it-all.
I met him once at a banquet, though he surely does not remember. He was different then, less mad. Not yet disfigured, but still a killer.
It was then that Jericho leaned in, conspiratorially.
I could dispatch him for you, before he causes trouble. Because I assure you, he will cause trouble.
I don't give a hot cup of gerbagol what you do. What he does, what anybody does. I just make the drinks and get paid.
Jericho nodded. A slight smirk on his face.
Ah, yes. I understand you.
But the way he said it sounded like he heard Wooher say something he didn't say. And as Jericho moved to the other side of the bar to be nearer to Evazan, Wooher felt it. Like everything was coming down on his head. Wooher felt hot. Sweaty. And you didn't feel sweaty in a dry place like this. But here he was, feeling slick, woozy, feverish, not with an illness, but with a moment of grave indecision about his life and his place in it. Even as he poured a glass of blue spirit for a pilot, a little Chadra fan screeching at him, the reality of his situation hit him across the back like a club. Wooher had no one.
He had nothing but this bar, and these people, these freaks, these spacers and traitors, pirates and smugglers. Every day another body dropped. Every day protection money paid to the huts.
Didn't he see a couple Imperial troopers kicking around outside the door? Probably meant he would have to suffer an Imperial inspection soon, too. And it was then, right then, that the gravest indignity hit him. Those two droids came in the door. The Protocol and the Astromech. They came clanking in with the old hermit who showed up once in a wild moon and this fresh-faced desert kid. Already Wooher felt heat blistering his forehead. Not the heat of the day, which he was used to by now, but the fever of rage flashing across his brow. Droids! Droids!
Hey! He barked. We don't serve their kind here.
The kid, looking flummoxed, asked.
What?
You're droids, he growled. They'll have to wait outside. We don't want them here.
The kid looked even more flummoxed. And as the droids tottered back out into the desert heat, Wooher had to put his hand out to steady himself against the bar. The memories buffeted him like the winds of a Sirocco storm.
woo her. A fresh-faced teen boy. Heavy around the belly, but spry enough. Running down the halls of Arkak Station. The ground shaking. Blaster fire lighting the dark behind him. Droids. Black and gleaming. Moving through the station as they killed the power and executed everyone they found. His parents, dead, each peppered with blaster fire, the holes in them still smoldering. The hiss and whisper of pneumatic limbs behind him as droid eyes lit up the black, their blasters leveled at him, ready to fire. He shuddered, suddenly cold. Droids. He hated droids. The Clone Wars taught him that. Clankers couldn't be trusted. They were alive as any other, but more powerful. As eternal as their programming would allow, passed from body to body. They were smart. Dangerous. No matter what kind of restraining bolt you put on them. They had no mercy, the way a man has mercy. They were cold. Killers to the last. Or at least the potential to be. Wooer did not have long to dwell on this, however. Because now the fresh-faced kid stood at the bar, tugging on Wooer's sleeve the way a kid does to an elder. Stupid boy. Probably just some hick from the sticks. Wooer groused at him. Slid a glass of dirty water across the bar. Kid wanted clean water. He was welcome to pay a premium for the privilege, just like everyone else. Near to the bar, the hairball Wookiee was talking to the old hermit. Neither of them was drinking a thing at the moment, of course, just taking up seats. But out of nowhere, a commotion kicked up. The stupid kid must have bumped into the Aqualish. Or maybe the Aqualish bumped into the kid. Didn't matter, because that Saki or Ponda Baba or whatever his name was became skeeved off something fierce. Worst of all, here came the milk eye, Ebazan. Mad as a sun-baked womp rat. "He doesn't like you," Ebazan said to the kid. The boy, confused, answered simply enough.
"I'm sorry."
"I don't like you either." It's then that the milk eye goes into boasting mode. "You just watch yourself. We're wanted men. I have the death sentence on 12 systems. Wooer thought, who says that? Who announces that they're a God's-blamed criminal with a death sentence? Might as well print your bounty number across your head, make yourself a target to every whack job with a debt to pay.
"Well, be careful,"
the boy said, not being careful at all. Stupid kid. "You'll be dead!" Ebazan snarled, grabbing the boy and spinning him around. And that's when the old man, the hermit, got involved. "This little one's not worth the effort," he said. His voice crisp, regal, not like those in these parts. The old hermit didn't drink much, but always paid for clean water. Never caused trouble. Never spoke up much. The old man in that regal voice of his offered to buy Ebazan something. Ebazan roared, throwing the boy backward and into a table. The kid crashed against it, going down like a sack of rocks. Someone drew a blaster, the Aqualish maybe. It was like being back on Arkax again. And Wooer thought to get out of the way. Their blasters leveled at him, ready to fire. A blue spear of light cut through the cantina air. Behind the droids, twin spears of light, blue and green. Wooer leapt for the ground, panic kicking him in the ribs. The sound of screams, of a limb hitting the ground. Droid screeching, hissing as laser sabers cut them to pieces. And then Wooer stood again. The aftermath was plain to see. The Aqualish cradling a stump arm. Ebazan collapsed against a stool, his chest rent open.
farm boy staring, eyes wide as the twin suns. The old man, coolly nodding as he led the boy away. And like that, all returned to normal. Music began playing anew. Jericho harrumphed and turned away, continuing to let vapor rings lazily drift from his puckered lips. Just another day here in a Mos Eisley cantina. But it wasn't just another day for Wooer. Not now. Not anymore. The memory of this day and that day so long ago played again and again in his mind. Each memory chasing the last. Circles and circles, round and round. Blasters up, droids, limbs, sabers of light. The chaos wasn't over that day. Far from it. It wasn't long before a pair of stormtroopers came in, started asking what happened here. What Wooer thought was this. I don't much know what happened here today. I know I kicked a couple of dirty droids out, because you can't trust dirty droids. I know that there was a nasty character here who told me his name was Rufu, and that his friend was Saki. But he was really someone named Evazan. His friend was Ponda Baba. I know they messed with the wrong farm boy, because that farm boy had a friend. A hermit, who up until now was just that. Just a hermit. But I think he was more than a hermit. I think he was a Jedi of old. Thought they were dead and gone, the Jedi. They once saved my life, those Jedi. Saved me from a whole battalion of dirty droids. So I'm inclined to give this one a pass. And you should too.
He didn't say any of that, of course. He knew not to get involved or say the wrong thing to a couple of Imperials. He knew too that the old man and the boy were already gone, having seen the troopers come in. He pointed in the direction of the empty tables and shrugged. Later, a single shot screamed out, and the Rodian Greedo dropped dead on the table as the smuggler Solo stood up and walked away, like it was no big thing. He tossed Wooer a couple of credits, said something slick, and then wandered out of the cantina. Wooer had to go over, drag the body out, hastily scrub blood from the table. But even as he did, those twin memories, today in the cantina, and that day on Arkak Station, back and forth, back and forth, memories chasing memories, like two scag claws chasing each other's tails, limbs and sabers, droids and death. Eventually, the day wound down. Wooer gave the cantina over to the night shift barkeep, a tough old broad named Akmina, who lived out on the Delkin Ridge with her wife, Sorshi. And Wooer did what he always did. He went, had a glass of blue milk to settle his stomach, and then he went to bed. And he wondered what the next day would bring. He wondered if he would do it all again, or if this was his chance, as it was so many years ago on Arkak Station, to change course, to do something different. That night long ago derailed everything. His parents dead. His life changed. Maybe now it was time to get back on the rails. Maybe he could change his path, even now. Maybe he could find some place of his own. Someone of his own. Maybe he could change his destiny. But would he?
The Cluehorn Cantina Caper by Kelly Sue DeConnick and Matt Fraction.
There is a legend,
Kabe begins,
in the Bif Overworld about the place that comes after death. The realm of all light. The big sleep. I don't know what they call it. They're Bith. You ever try talking to a Bith? Who knows? Anyway, whatever it is, in Bith Heaven, there's a club. A night.